The gridlock heard round the world. We go to the front lines of the debt market.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, in for Jeremy Hobson. The debt ceiling debate rages on as the August 2nd deadline creeps ever closer. After that, the government officially runs out of cash and could have to default on some debts, including U.S. government bonds. Marilyn Cohen with Envision Capital Management joins us live now to talk bonds. Good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning.
So a lot of foreign governments own a lot of U.S. bonds, and markets around the world are down, but they're definitely not panicking. Why not?
I think that they have a lot of confidence that even at the 12th hour, Congress will get it together and there will be no default. And it will be just another one of our kind of like family feuds that the market will get over very quickly.
Assuming this does get worked out, is there long-term damage to the U.S. Treasury bond? Do you think we've permanently affected the way people see U.S. bonds?
I don't think it'll be long-term damage. You don't hear anybody saying we don't deserve a downgrade. I think that the market will be very forgiving. And once we get it back together again, I do believe that it will be business as usual. You know, I remember when Japan went from AAA to AA, it was going to be Armageddon, and it didn't happen.
What are you going to be watching for this week as the debt ceiling clock winds down?
I'll be watching very closely the new deals that come out, whether it's Harry Reid or anybody else, the size of the spending cuts. I think that is really the key that people need to watch.
What are you going to be watching for specifically?
To see whether that number ends up being ratcheted up or ratcheted down. And I think that the market is anticipating a really large number, not a smaller number. If it's a smaller number, then I think there'll be some minor short-term disappointment. But anything under $2 trillion, I think, will be pretty bad news.
The number to watch for, Marilyn Cohen with Envision Capital Management. Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, a debt ceiling deal still seems elusive. Both sides say they're crafting their own plans this morning. Here to talk about the business of the negotiations is Tom Cohan with MIT's Sloan School of Management. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Stacey.
So, Tom, when the two lead negotiators in this case, President Obama and Republican Speaker John Boehner, they're not just negotiating for themselves, but on behalf of their parties and the public. How does that change the talks?
Well, we have a mixed negotiations here, negotiations where the people at the table don't really control their constituencies very well. And in many ways, the constituencies have been driving these negotiations, particularly on the Republican side, where the Tea Party caucus within the House really has staked out a very strong and unbending position. And that has limited Boehner's flexibility and limited his ability to make a deal.
One of the difficulties that they're running up against is that there are some people who don't seem to want a negotiation on both sides. How does that factor into this debate?
There's a concept in negotiations that you always have to worry about your BATNA. That is, what's your best alternative to a negotiated agreement? The Republican caucus in the House, the best alternative to a negotiated agreement is no agreement. They're okay with that because it makes them look good to their constituents and so allows them to hold to a more extreme position. The president doesn't really have a very good BATNA. He needs an agreement because the economy needs an agreement. And so unless the president can generate an alternative, he has to get an agreement somewhere in this process to raise that ceiling.
Tom Cohan is a professor at MIT's Sloan School of Management. Tom, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stacey.
Let's do the numbers. In China, the Shanghai Composite Index fell nearly 3%. European markets are mostly down this morning after Moody's slashed Greek government debt deeper into junk territory. London's FTSE is down 0.1%. U.S. markets closed down last week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell to 12,681.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constellation, supporting customer choice and clean, efficient energy sources and technologies, working with customers nationwide to create a sustainable energy future. Constellation.com. by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. And by Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu.
And now for a time-honored institution.
At the third stroke, the time from BT will be 10, 42, and 10 seconds.
Britain's speaking clock is celebrating its 75th anniversary. So why do the Brits still rely on something so antiquated? From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard explains.
The speaking clock has been telling the Brits the time for 75 years. 12 hours, 50 minutes and 45 seconds precisely. And it's still going strong. It still gets 30 million calls a year, earning the phone company BT some $16 million. A bit of a mystery when you can check the precise time for free on your cell phone or computer. But BT's Sian Wynne-Jones says many Brits still have more faith in the speaking clock.
It is the single point of accurate time in the UK. It's accurate to 0.005 of a second. It's so accurate that even Big Ben is synchronised by the speaking clock.
The Brits use it most on New Year's Eve, but the need for accuracy may not be the only reason people call the speaking clock. The man whose voice delivered the time for 22 years used to get fan mail. Some people called the service late at night just to hear his calm, reassuring tones. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally, Citigroup is unveiling a new credit card today. It's being marketed as plain vanilla and fee-free. The so-called Simplicity card has no late fees and a single interest rate for all purchases. It's also got a pretty steep interest rate, 17%, no rewards, and requires a really high credit score to qualify. Hey, it's a credit card. You didn't think it was going to be without a catch, did you? In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
It seems so basic until you can't do it.
Thumb is able to grasp a plate or to pass a business card or to grasp a key to turn in a lock.
Introducing the iLimb. I'm Kai Rizdahl, publicity for prosthetics. Next time on Marketplace, it's from APM. That's American Public Media. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.